In 1969, four moppy-haired musicians named John, Paul, George, and Ringo walked single file on a London crosswalk, and they made one of the most iconic album covers of all time, Abbey Road. Come together. Today, a steady stream of Beatles fans and London tourists are still eager to walk in the footsteps of the Fab Four on that famous stretch of asphalt.
I think one time I went up there at about 10:30 on a Sunday night, and they were still doing it then, so, you know, it never ends.
This is Alastair Lawrence.
I'm a British music journalist.
And he's written a new book on the history of Abbey Road Studios, the studio where the Beatles recorded many of their albums, including Abbey Road.
It's located in North London in an area called St John's Wood. And it was originally a 9-bedroom mansion, and it was bought and converted into the world's first ever custom recording studio, and it opened its doors on the 12th of November 1931.
Before Beatles mania, Abbey Road Studios went by another name, EMI Studios, named after the major recording label that still owns it today. In its early days, the studio was known for recording classical pieces like what you're hearing now. This is Pomp and Circumstance, March No. 1, Opus 39, by Edward Elgar. Abbey Road Studios also played an historic role in recording the King's Speech. Yes, the King's Speech, the real one, depicted in the recent film when King George VI declared war against Germany in a 1939 radio broadcast.
In this grave hour, perhaps the most fateful in our history,
he had to do it live, and it was an incredibly tense situation for a speaker who was bound to be nervous. So they took advantage of the technology at Abbey Road to use a telephone line connection and record it at the studio for posterity.
For the second time in the lives of most of us, we are at war.
After the war, British music producers looked across the pond and saw the rise of a poppier sound in American music that was beginning to catch fire in the UK.
And they decided that it wasn't enough to simply import and produce this music. They needed to have British rivals to it, and a British equivalent, maybe is a better expression. And they hired new producers and new A&R men, among them, you know, George Martin, obviously. And the focus shifted subsequently throughout, you know, the late 40s and then into the 50s and then obviously the 60s, where British pop music came to dominate the airwaves and dominate a lot of what they did at Abbey Road.
And leading the British pop force out of Abbey Road was, of course, the Beatles.
Love me do.
They were part of, you know, a number of bands that I think were scouted and EMI were considering signing. So they came in one night to record a demo session, and it impressed them to the point where they signed them, and the rest is quite momentous history, really.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields.
The first thing I ever engineered was starting on Magical Mystery Tour.
This is Ken Scott. He was a sound engineer at Abbey Road Studios, and he worked with the Beatles on some of their final albums. Scott says engineering the Beatles' recording sessions at Abbey Road was a bit like experimenting in a sound lab.
Let's say I was recording a piano. I could use completely the wrong mic, completely screw up the sound on it, and there was just as much likelihood of them coming up and saying, "It sounds terrible, let's use it," as there was anything else. So I was never particularly worried about it. It was amazing training.
You were young when you started at Abbey Road, right?
I started at the age of 16, yes. And within, I think it was a week of starting there, I had in my hands the master tape for Can't Buy Me Love. A couple of weeks later, I was walking along the corridor carrying some tapes. There were hundreds of screaming young girls out front, and walking towards me came the two Georges, Martin and Harrison, and I just wanted to scream like those little girls outside, but managed to sort of bite my tongue for a bit and didn't let it out until I got upstairs and no one would really hear me.
The Beatles named the last album they recorded together after the address of their beloved studio, 3 Abbey Road. And the success of Abbey Road, the album, inspired EMI Studios to change its name. Music engineer Ken Scott says one of the things that makes Abbey Road stand out is
the variety of stuff that was recorded there. In the morning, you could be working on a classical session in number one. In the afternoon, you could be on with a dance band. And then in the evening, you could be with Pink Floyd. And so you got to see so many different styles of recording, and it all resonates, and it's amazing.
Alistair, you have claimed, though, as the subtitle of your book, Abbey Road, that it is, or was, the best studio in the world. Why?
Well, it blazed a trail. I mean, I think other recording studios would have happened eventually if it weren't for Abbey Road, but it pioneered that whole movement. It showed that it could be done. And even now, with the move away from using big recording studios to, you know, people producing music in their bedrooms with computers or what have you, it stayed relevant, and much as it's sort of a living piece of history, it continues to push boundaries and be inventive like it always did.
Alistair Lawrence is the author of Abbey Road, the best studio in the world. He joined us from the BBC studios in London, and Ken Scott is a former sound engineer at Abbey Road Studios. His memoir is called Abbey Road to Ziggy Stardust, and he joined us from NPR West. Thanks to both of you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
For me too.
And you can see archive photos of the Beatles, Kate Bush, Stevie Wonder, and other musicians working at Abbey Road Studios. Go to our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Rachel Martin.